Hello, I'm James.
Hi, I'm Jimmy.
Welcome to A Job Done Well,
the podcast about the world of work and how to improve the daily grind.
Good morning, how are you doing?
I'm all right, how are you doing, James?
I'm doing very well, thank you very much. What are we going to talk about today then?
Today we are going to talk about corporate language, corporate buzzwords, jargon, acronyms, corporate myths. Are they just a slightly Brent-esque joke and a way of excluding people, or are they an effective way of communication?
Right then, before we get into that, how's your week been?
Really good. I had a weekend at Centre Parks with my two daughters.
Ah, very,
very
good.
Very middle class of us.
Yeah.
But it was great. Two things to mention. One, it was fantastic to spend a bit of time with just them and me, so I really enjoyed that. I think they tolerated it. Maybe even enjoyed it at times.
They enjoy it more if your hand's in your wallet, I find.
Well, yeah, they didn't pay for anything, so they must have enjoyed it on that definition. But also, we've been going there since they were like tiny little kids.
Yeah.
And what we did notice this time were there are a few of the little bits that they do that they're not doing anymore. So it was things like not leaving toiletries in the lodges and stuff like that. And the other big
cost
one,
of living crisis.
It is,
mate.
No, but it's interesting how this is like premium holiday place, and they charge you top dollar.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, you're noticing these little bits and pieces. The big one though that we noticed was that all the swimming pools, the spa, the hot tubs, everything slightly colder. And I would guess that that isn't because somebody's made a mistake. I would say
turn the thermostat down.
Just save a little bit on the cost.
I shouldn't think it's a little bit actually.
I'd imagine it would add up to a lot of money, but yeah, just interesting to notice how they're changing their business model very slightly.
The salami slicing school of management. I had a boss once. He said to me, I used to make frozen foods, I was a development manager.
Yeah.
And my boss said, you know, you can make it cheap. You can put a percent sand in any product you like. If you grind it up, it's fine enough. No one will notice. But he said to me, but you ruin the products the second time you do it, which I thought was quite
interesting. And at some point, their swimming pools will become cold enough that people don't want to go in them.
Anyway, on the subject of salami slicing, that leads us very nicely into our topic of the day, which is corporate language. So where does corporate language come from? Has it always been something? Well, as I want to do, I looked it up, and apparently it really started after the Second World War, particularly in America, where in the 50s, where members of staff from the US Army started to go out into corporate worlds. And they brought with them terms like logistics, strategy, tactics. So words that really mean something, but weren't part of the sort of business lexicon. So there's where the start comes. Then, of course, you had a bunch of consultants, and consultants love to be selling something new. So they were adding more and more new terms because every consultant has a new model or a new framework. And that is how it started to grow. And then, of course, people throw in the odd random term and they get picked up as well. And I looked at it and I thought, well, why are we so in love with these terms? Why do we keep going with it?
Yeah.
And apparently there is a term to explain this, which is called human peacocking.
All right.
And what that means is that we love to look clever and we love to fluff our feathers up and we love to be on the inside. So if your CEO is talking about salami slicing, then everybody else will start talking about salami slicing. There is also, of course, social pressure, which reinforces it. So particularly if you are lower down the organisation, not using the language singles you out. It's a bit like not wearing the dress code. So you can see how it really starts to reinforce itself.
I think another surprising statistic, and a part of it was not surprising, the surprising bit was 25% of people say they hate corporate buzzwords.
Yeah.
But 75% of people say they use them to make themselves look cleverer. But I think that supports your point about people wanting to look knowledgeable.
Well, I used to work with one, and I swear she didn't know what she was talking about. I used to ask her what she meant, and she just reverted to more and more and more corporate language.
So there's a few things, I think, that we would have under this banner of corporate language. There's acronyms.
Yeah.
Metaphors.
Yeah.
There are kidnap terms, so terms that had a meaning, but they've now been used to death in another way, so they lose their meaning. There are meaningless words, and disingenuous.
Okay.
So they're the kind of five headings. Let's explore each of them.
So first of all, we're going to talk about TLAs.
TLAs, what's that?
Three-letter acronyms.
Ah, oh, I like it.
So quite often, these are company-specific. And actually, if you know them, they make life easier for you. So do you remember we used to talk about 7-6ing things in the past?
No, what was that?
Ah, so 7-6, we used to have a phone system which used to leave voice messages.
Yes.
And the way you got rid of a voice message was you used to 7-6 it, hit 7-6.
Ah, oh, I can't believe I didn't remember that. Because I used to 7-6 all your messages, funny enough.
7-6 something, get shot of it as quickly as possible. Yeah. And then there are other ones, of course, which are okay, but different companies use the same letters. So POC could be proof of concept or point of contact. The one that used to get me was AMF.
Right.
Anhydrous milk fat or annual monetary fee.
Right. Depends where you work, I suppose, on that one.
So other examples, you've got, because you can define this a little bit more, you've got initialisms, apparently, DRM, FTE, JIT, and my favourite, JTFL.
My favourite is JFDI.
Ah. You've then got things which can be either initialisms or acronyms. So you've got ASAP or ASAP.
Right.
And then you've got acronyms, which is when you make a word from bits of the words of the phrase. So, for example, NATO.
North Atlantic Treaty Organization. Yes.
KISS.
Keep it simple, stupid.
And shit.
Not often.
should have it tomorrow. We use that one a lot in the operation that I used to run.
Fair enough. Well, if we look at metaphors, so metaphors are where you describe something using imagery. So it gets the idea over, but some are better than others.
Oh, I quite like some of these.
Like herding cats?
Yeah, I've done a lot of that in my career.
Boil the ocean.
I've done a lot of that as well.
I've done a lot of the next one. Drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah.
Low-hanging fruit?
Yeah, you can get sick with too much low-hanging fruit.
Yeah, and singing from the same hymn sheet.
Metaphors, I don't know, I quite like metaphors. What's next then?
Kidnap terms.
Nah, some of these wind me up.
All right, so some of these are terms that really do have a meaning, but it's been lost. So things like critical path, synergy, transformation.
Critical path. People banging on about that who've never seen a project plan in their life.
I know, but the principle of knowing what your critical path is to achieving something, or the principle of transformation, you know, as in large changes, the principles make sense, but the word has been used to death in the wrong way.
But worse than that, things which have been taken from another discipline.
Yeah, so things like, one for you, James, evolve the business.
Oh, winds me up.
Just because you're a scientist.
Yeah, I've got a degree in genetics. People talk about evolving their business. They didn't bloody evolve their business. Evolving means there are lots of small changes and you see which ones work. What they did was they changed something and hoped it would work. It's not evolving your business.
Do you have the bandwidth?
Yeah, go on.
Touch base.
I do like a good sporting term.
Yes, you're all about sporting terms, you.
Yeah.
We should kick that into touch
Very good.
Yeah. You know, where I grew up, James, there was a thing that you didn't trust anyone who didn't like sport.
It's a good job I didn't live where you did when you were a kid.
Very true. Anyhow, these terms have lost their meaning, really. And I guess all of the things we talked about, acronyms, metaphors, kidnap terms, used in the right way, sparingly, in the right context, they can add value. They can make communication improved. Or, used badly, definitely not. Anyhow, on to some that definitely don't add value.
Yeah, all right. This category we've got called made-up bollocks. And in here we've got some priceless phrases. How about, run it up the flagpole to see who salutes?
Nonsense.
You could belly up to the bar.
Now that was an old boss of ours.
Yeah.
Who used to talk about it. That's a real thing. And I think that's a bit of an Americanism.
Yeah.
So we do have listeners in America. So we should show them some respect. That may mean a lot to them. The other one he used to use was to hang out your shingle. And he explained that to me once.
Isn't shingles a disease?
No, it's not the disease. In front of their houses, they have like hooks and you hang out your number or the name of your property.
All right.
So he was using that as, you know, hang out your shingles.
Show who you are.
Show who you are. Show what you stand for.
Okay. So here's a question for you. Have you got your ducks in a row? You probably only got two ducks if you've got them in a row, mate. And maybe the worst ever thought shower.
Political correctness gone mad, isn't it?
Absolutely. Now, we could take these ones a little bit further. What we should have done earlier on in our career is we should just have made some up to see if we could get them to stick. How about, let's Weetabix it.
What's that mean?
Have you had your Weetabix? Do you remember the adverts?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right.
It's bullshit.
And another one which I really think should stick is our running Project Hessian.
A form of sacking.
Very good.
Yes. But we did actually manage to make one stick. When we worked together in a credit card company, Capital One, they had a restaurant in their main building.
They did.
One Stop.
It was very good.
It was excellent.
Used to do fantastic sandwiches.
Yeah. So that was One Stop. When they opened a second building, the second building had also had a restaurant, which was also very good. And if you remember, we all started calling it Two Stop. That wasn't its name, but we all called it Two Stop. We kept on using that name, and sure enough, it became Two Stop.
I'm not sure which is more tragic, the fact that it stuck or that we thought it was funny. Now, the key thing here, though, is that, as we said earlier, people use these phrases in an attempt to make themselves sound clever.
Yeah, absolutely. Why we just can't communicate simply? I mean, a good few examples of that. We all say, keep me in the loop.
Update me.
We are on the same page.
Oh, we are in alignment.
Yes. Which is agreement. We agree. Move the needle.
Get some progress.
I'm giving you a heads up.
Oh, thank you.
A warning. Take this offline.
Talk later.
Pick your brain.
You're not going anywhere near my brain, mate.
I really don't want to, but I would ask you a question. And I bet one that you've never done is say to somebody, I'll ping you.
Yeah, but I am guilty of reaching out to people.
Yeah, instead of just contacting someone. And every company has a narrative.
A corporate narrative. What is a corporate narrative?
Just say story. A narrative is a story. But all of those are examples.
No, it doesn't sound as good, does it? A corporate story.
No, exactly. But all of those are examples of where we say one thing, we mean something simpler, but we're just trying to jazz up our language to make ourselves seem clever. Say it. Ron Seal.
Ron Seal.
Say what it is.
Yeah, very good. The problem, of course, though, is these things do just drift into the language and then they become a habit.
You don't even realise you're doing it. Again, when we worked at Capital One, we were doing some work with an outside supplier. And at the end of this work, the first thing they said to us is, you lot are Cap One, you all start every sentence with so.
Yeah.
And when he said it, it was like, yeah, you know we do.
Do you know what's worse?
Yeah, what's worse is here we are 15 odd years later, and I'll bet you if you go back and listen to some of this podcast, we say so at the start of a load of sentences, even now.
Now, having said that, there are some which I didn't know, which I think are quite good. So whilst I was researching this, have you ever jumped the shark?
No, I can safely say I have not jumped the shark.
Well, jumping the shark is a thing apparently, but what it means is that you lose sight of the customer's needs or you make an irreversible error of judgment. And I thought that was quite good because I've worked for several places where they have jumped the shark and they probably ought to have it called out to them.
Well, let's move on to the disingenuous stuff that we have highlighted in corporate language. And I think there's a great example of this recently who we have to thank Simon Lefebvre, one of the listeners for this one. He shared this. It was by James Cleverly, the Home Secretary.
Current Home Secretary
for the next 10 minutes.
Well, sure. What's his job security look like?
He had said that now we should call the backlog of asylum seekers, not call it a backlog, We should call it a queue now.
Ah, okay.
A queue being far more acceptable than a backlog.
It's a bloody big queue. How many people are in it?
94,000 cases that have now been in a backlog that now will be just simply queuing.
Okay.
And you know, that would be, if it was a town, it would be the 88th biggest town in the country, bigger than Stevenage, trouncing Grimsby, larger than Western Supermare. Just goes to show, politics and performance just shouldn't get them mixed up, should you?
Yes. Now, starting to become a bit more serious about this, being clever and communicating really are not the same thing. And there is a lovely example of this, which was apparently the local government association were critical of unclear language in local government materials.
Yeah, sensible.
All right. And Leeds City Council, bless them, ponied up to this.
Right.
So apparently what Leeds City Council had written was, are you ready for this?
Go on.
Individual chief officers have the delegated authority to appoint employees on a temporary basis to provide cover for staff absences, to cater for peaks in workload, and to deal with any tasks which may arise which are outside of normal workload of the departments. Such approvals to be subject to there being budgetary provision available and a check being made with the Personnel and Training Division to ascertain whether the cover could be provided by either a redeployment or a secondment.
Deep breath, James. God.
Yeah. So do you know what that means?
Go on then.
Well, they rewrote it and they changed it to, if they are required, money is available and the job can't be done by another member of staff, chief officers may hire temporary workers.
Well done, Leeds City Council.
Yeah, shot up in my estimation. Another example, and this is a very good example, I think, of where being clear with language is really helpful. So, in 2009...
There you go. Okay, I see what you did
In 2009, Domino's Pizza started to turn around. Now, most, you know, companies, they claim something like they were leveraging the core competence of customer delight or whatever, but that's not what Domino's did. What right. Domino's did was they published criticisms from their customers. Their customers have said, the crisp tastes like cardboard,
yeah.
The sauce tastes like ketchup, and this is an imitation of pizza.
Scathing.
Right, but it's not the sort of thing you think a corporation would normally do. But once they got so clear about that, they went around, and we can argue the toss about whether or not Domino's Pizza is good pizza or not, but they went about improving their product, and since then the share price has risen from $86 to $426. So a lovely little lesson in being clear about things.
Well, at least it means that you're facing into the problem then in that instance.
Yeah. Operational definition is really quite important, you know. Being very clear what you are talking about. There's a lovely quote, one of my management heroes, Demings, and he said, words have no meaning unless they are translated into action agreed upon by everyone.
Yeah, and the thing is, you can keep changing the definition.
Yeah.
And that's often what happens, back to the queue and backlog.
Yeah.
But did you know that the Conservative government changed the definition of unemployment over 30 times in the 1980s to try and change the stats?
Am I unemployed or am I unemployed? Now, we shouldn't just have some Tory bashing on this cast.
Well, I don't know.
Oh, yeah, here you go. Here's another one then. Question for you. When is a weapon of mass destruction a weapon of mass destruction?
So, moving on.
Oh, very good.
Why do we use the language?
Well, I think there are about five reasons, really. First of all, we use it to sell something,
yeah.
And it might not be that we've got anything new, but we do like to dress it up in new language.
Sometimes we use this sort of language to sweeten the message. You know, why talk about sacking people when you can talk about streamlining or downsizing?
Or right-sizing. Or even better, I heard a new one, ICE.
What's ICE stand for?
It's an involuntary career event.
We've had a few of them, haven't we?
Yeah, we've both been iced. The other thing you can do is you can use it to hide your ineptitude. So it's a lot easier to tell people to move fast and break things or to synchronise and synergise than to tell them to do something instructive.
We can also use language to look impressive. If you're a middle manager in a slightly below average company, when you can be a global director of best practice.
Mm. And finally, it's all about joining the in-group. So if your chief executive is hell-bent on capitalising on volatility, uncertainty, complexity and ambiguity, and then leveraging the VUCA, search me, I'm not entirely sure what it means yet, but you will get a long way. It's not all bad though. There are a number of positives.
Right.
If done well, language can be used to simplify communication. Also, provides a great source of entertainment.
Buzzword bingo.
Yeah. Creates comradeship, providing it's not exclusive. And if it's done really well, as in the Domino's case, can really force action.
There are some downsides though.
Yeah, go on.
It can be exclusive, but not in a good way.
Yeah. So
it can make people feel excluded.
You are not part of the club.
It can be easily confusing to people.
Yeah.
It can make you look like an absolute knob, and it doesn't make you look either clever or authentic. So our recommendation is don't use it. But if you really must, don't be too disruptive, or you'll have to pivot and socialise things repeatedly to get your ducks in a row. So consider, do you have the bandwidth to lean into it? Or maybe just speak like a normal human.
Very good. You've excelled yourself. Right, I think that is that for this week's episode.
It is. Hopefully you've enjoyed this week's episode. If you've got any questions or comments or need help sharpening up your corporate bullshit, get in touch with James or I at jimmy@ajobdonewell.com
or james@ajobdonewell.com.
Thanks everyone, have a great week.
Cheers now.
If you'd like to find out more about how James and I can help your business, then have a look at our website, jobdonewell.com.